Hello and welcome to Russians with Attitude. This is a second part of the Romanov series, where we will try to figure out the messiest chapter of Russian history, Time of Troubles, and the birth of the Romanov dynasty that saved Russia from inevitable death. In the first episode of the Romanov series, episode number 0, we have covered Ivan Grozny's reign. We try to be as objective as possible in our treatment of Ivan. He was successful in pacifying the Khanates, devouring their territories and peoples, and growing the Russian Tsardom. He has forever changed the trajectory of the Russian state. It was no longer a loosely connected bunch of Slavic principalities anymore, but something much greater, an eclectic proto-empire that could assimilate dozens of peoples and unite them under one flag and one god. Grozny's reforms have whipped Russia into shape. His Streltsy riflemen units were an absolute necessity in our never-ending wars. Yet, by that point, by late 16th century, we have not yet achieved parity with other European militaries. Ivan Grozny's war against the unified Eastern Europe, the Livonian War, proved to be not very much successful, and we have lost northwestern territories and all access to Baltic Sea. This defeat aside, there was a bigger problem that faced the Rurikid dynasty: lack of strong heirs, and it led us to the Time of Troubles. Let's remember Grozny's children. He and his first wife, Anastasia Romanovna, have produced 6 children. First two were girls who died in infancy, then there was the Tsarevich Dmitry, who drowned at 8 months old. Apparently, after Ivan's victorious conquest of Kazan, he fell gravely ill, at age 22 no less, and he demanded that all the boyars would swear fealty to the baby boy, baby Dmitry, in case Ivan dies. In Ivan's inner circle, there were a lot of the relatives from his wife's side, Zakharine Koshkine, which later on became the Romanov dynasty. So all his wife's relatives were happy to take an oath because, well, baby Dmitry was their kin. But most of the other boyar families, such as Shuisky and others, have refused to do this. They correctly saw this premature accession of baby Dmitry as complete domination of the Zakharine clan. So instead, they cursed the baby boy, the first Ivan's son. When Ivan Grozny has recovered from his illness, he was dissatisfied with the disobedience of his boyars, and he went to the monastery to pray with his family. And on their way to Kirillov monastery, somehow the baby boy has drowned in a river, to the much jubilation of the boyars. But it's not the Dmitry that you all know from the fake Dmitrys. Yeah, there was another Dmitry, Dmitry of Uglich. Alright, 3 children out of the way. Next up, he had another boy in 2 years, Ivan Ivanovich. Actually turned out alright. He lived a pretty normal life. He married and, well, he waited for his father's eventual death. And everyone believed that he will be the successor of Ivan Grozny. But he also died at 27 years of age. Historians argue about it constantly, because there is a pop culture idea that he was bludgeoned to death by his old crazy father. Supposedly, Grozny was aggrieved by the wife of Ivan. Somehow she disrespected him, or they were not following his orders. So he beat her to the point of miscarriage, and then he killed his 27-year-old son with a staff. But other historians actually think that he just fell ill and he died out of some illness. Then there was another baby, Evdokia, girl, died in infancy. And the last child of Anastasia Romanovna, Fyodor, who will become the last Rurikid ruler of Russia. A success, finally. Nicknamed Fyodor I, Blazhenny, or Blessed. Really, he was a holy fool who was completely under the boot of his regent, Boris Godunov. And there were a few more children of Ivan Grozny. Vasily, born from his second marriage, who died in infancy. And the last one, the last child of Ivan Grozny. Because all the others were either dead, or girls, or Fyodor, the blessed fool. So, people were still hoping that maybe the last son will prove to be of some worth. Dmitry of Uglich. He was born in 1582 from Grozny's last wife, Maria Nagaya. And this boy was basically, yeah, as I said, the last hope for a normal heir. So he was relatively healthy, as in he did not die in infancy. When Dmitry was two years of age, Ivan Grozny has died and went straight to heaven. The line of succession prevented Dmitry from becoming a little tsar at 2 years of age, because there was an older bro, Fyodor, the mental defect, and who cares if he's out to lunch, because there is always a handyman, Boris Godunov, the regent of this blessed fool, who became de facto ruler of Russia. And of course, he immediately exiled Dmitry Ivanovich, the last son of Ivan Grozny, his mother and all the family to Uglich. That's why he is now known as Dmitry of Uglich. It's a city in Yaroslavl Oblast now, a very powerful one. So anyway, Dmitry and the family were relocated to Uglich. And as it always happened in pre-Romanov Russia, his life was cut short in a very bloody fashion.
Yes, officially little Dmitry died during an epileptic fit where he fell on either a knife or a pair of scissors and cut his own throat accidentally.
Yeah.
This is such
when that happens.
I mean, it is such a freak accident that it may actually have happened, but most people believe that he had been assassinated by Boris Godunov so he could
his orders, yes.
Yes, so that he could take over the throne after blessed Fyodor. The image of Fyodor as a holy fool or an idiot is also controversial, I think. I
have not researched that, actually.
He was widely regarded as, yeah, not a very intelligent person, but there's also the point of view that he was not so much an idiot as he was just not interested in worldly things, that he was incredibly religious and spent all his time in prayer and did not care much for ruling.
Well, yeah, Blaženny means that, actually, more than a mental defect.
He is a canonized saint of the Orthodox Church, but his rule was widely regarded as quite a blessed time, regardless of whether it was because of his prayers, because of his constant praying for Russia, or because of the abilities of his regent or minister Boris Godunov. And his reign was quite successful. It lasted for 15 years, and it included, among other things, the last successful raid by Crimean Tatars into Russian land, the last time they actually managed to reach Moscow. This happened in 1591, and the Khan Gazi Giray of the Crimean Horde, well, as has happened many times before, he sent a huge army to Moscow, was however soundly defeated. After the defeat near Moscow, the Khan wrote a letter to Fyodor Ivanovich, promising him to renew the friendship with him, and stating that he intended to declare full independence from the Ottomans, and also to move his country to the Dnieper so he could serve the Russian Tsar and become a barrier from the Ottomans. This was all a lie. He had never any intention of doing any of that. It was supposed to, well, basically calm the Russians while the Khan was preparing another raid, even though he lost 2/3 of his army in the battle near Moscow. Taking advantage of the absence of Russian troops, because at the same time, there was another war going on, which I'll talk about in a second, war with the Swedes. The Crimean army suddenly attacked Tula and Rezhen, leaving with a bunch of slaves and loot. But after that, the Khan became aggressive again and even started planning another attack on Moscow. But the Ottomans forced him to help them in the ongoing Austro-Turkish War. 2 years later, the Khan signed a peace treaty with the Russian state with the permission of the Ottoman Sultan. And this was the very last time a Crimean Tatar army ever reached central Russia again. So aside from that, the Russian state also managed to take revenge for previous misfortunes against the Swedes. Namely, in the Russo-Swedish War of 1590 to 1595, Godunov himself and Fyodor of Russia marched towards Novgorod, crossed the Narva River, and laid siege to the Swedish castle of Narva. Captured it, and they also captured Revel and even Finnish lands up to Helsinki, or Helsingfors, as it was called back then. The Swedish governor was forced to sign a peace treaty, a treaty that reversed the Treaty of Prusa, which we talked about in the last episode, surrendering territory again. But the King of Sweden, John III, did not agree with that and decided to continue the war. So the main theaters of the war were Estonia and Finland, Eastern Karelia. The Swedes deployed quite gruesome raiding tactics, and especially using their Finnish peasant mercenaries, whom they used as, death squads, basically. They destroyed the Pechenga Monastery, killing all the monks. He tried to do the same again at Soloveitsky Monastery, but that didn't work. Godunov's government managed to reverse the war
and return some of the lands that were lost due to the Livonian War.
Yes.
So yeah, Godunov was a very competent regent and a ruler.
The war with the Swedes ended up that Russia, it was indecisive in the end, kind of a draw. Russia returned all the territory it ceded in the Truce of Prusa, except the city of Narva. But Russia also had to renounce all claims on Estonia, including Narva. And these lands would not become Russian again for many, many decades, almost a century. Aside from the war, this was also a time of great city building. A whole bunch of cities were founded in what used to be the borderlands of the Dike Pole, the wild field, the lands in the Russian southwest, which were habitually raided by nomads, be it the Pechenegs in the Middle Ages, or later the Crimean Tatars, or any other nomadic riders who were in the vicinity. And also, of course, Russian Cossacks, who also did the same. So among the cities that were founded during Fyodor's reign are, all the biggest cities, really, of the Russian Tsars: Voronezh, Belgorod, Kursk, Samara, Saratov, Tsaritsyn. And not just the south saw a lot of city building, but also following in the footsteps of Yermak, the Tsar's voivodas founded a bunch of fortresses that would become cities in Siberia, most important of which Tumen and Tobolsk. This, however, also contributed to one of the main problems that had a real influence on the time of troubles and the systemic crisis that was plaguing Russia, namely the overextension of the Russian state. The overextension was not only a military and bureaucratic problem, it was also a demographical problem. Since the middle of the 16th century, central Russian lands began to become depopulated. Not only due to famine and epidemics, but also due to colonization, because many of the poor peasants of central Russia moved to either the Chernozem of the south with much more fertile lands, or to the east, where they were looking for the eastern frontier, the Siberian frontier. And this led to a whole bunch of demographic and economic problems, which greatly contributed to the crisis that shook Russia to its foundation and led to the apocalyptic events of the Time of Troubles. One of the other most important events of Fyodor's rule was the creation of the Russian Patriarchate. In 1589, the Metropolitan Jope was declared Patriarch of Moscow and all the Russias. With that began the, well, story of the Russian Church completely independent from Constantinople.
Let's return for a bit to the Dmitry of Uglich, because it's quite a key figure in the upcoming Time of Troubles in Russia. So the main investigator of this case was a boyar Vasily Shuisky. Remember that name, because he will be quite an important figure soon enough. Vasily Shuisky is actually also from the House of Rurikids, from a different branch. So Shuisky concluded that, yeah, nothing to see here, it was just your old epileptic fit. There was a funny episode, there was a gruesome episode. People, the locals of Uglich, were roused by Maria Nagaya, a mother of a deceased kid, or a murdered kid. And people went nuts, and they started killing Godunov's men, who they deemed to be Dmitry's killers. National Guard came in and beat up the rioters. Some of them were exiled to Siberia. Maria Nagaya was also exiled to Siberia. It's one of the ways how they started populating the Siberia with the Russians. And they even decided to punish the bell that the rioters were banging on to announce their riot against the Godunov's men. The church bell was whipped, its clapper was removed, and the bell was sent to Siberia and stayed there for 3 centuries. Out of all wars, famines, and disasters, the civil wars are almost always the most devastating ones, and Time of Troubles was not caused just by the end of the Rurikid line, because, well, Fyodor, he had no children, right?
Yes, that is correct. He died childless, and such the Moscow line of the Rurikid dynasty was extinct. There are, of course, many other lines of the Rurikids. It's a huge house, really, and most of the ancient Russian aristocratic houses are somehow related to the Rurikids. After Tsar Fyodor died, there were 2 candidates for the throne. The first, of course, being Boris Godunov, Fyodor's minister, regent perhaps, and brother-in-law, and also Fyodor Romanov, the eldest nephew of the late Tsaritsa Anastasia, Ivan Grozny's first wife, who was also the son of Nikita Romanovich, whom you may remember from the last episode. Fyodor Romanov was married to Ksenia Shestova, but of all their 6 children, only 2 survived and only 1 son. The future Tsar Mikhail. He was born in 1596. In the end, Godunov was elected by an assembly of boyars.
Zemsky Sabor, yes.
Yes, the Zemsky Sabor. He was the nearest thing to a legitimate ruler after the extinction of the Moscow Rurikids, and he was initially backed by Fyodor Romanov. Godunov was quite gifted, as he had shown during the reign of Fyodor I, but he was quite unlucky. He was probably the best choice at the moment to become Tsar of Russia, but it was problematic.
Well, because he was not a Rurikid, and Tsar was not just a CEO, but a divine being almost. Then the problems arose, cataclysms and all that, famine, 4 years into Godunov's reign.
The little ice age.
Yeah.
Which also in roundabout ways contributed to the 30 years war in Europe.
So the little ice age coincided with the Godunov's reign.
So Fyodor Romanov, however, kept plotting against Boris Godunov because he wanted the throne for the Romanovs. He was the first one who started spreading rumors about survival of the Tsarevich Dmitry. This was also used by the Poles, namely the Polish embassy in Moscow by Lev Sapiegi, who started plotting at the court and trying to incite the boyars against Godunov. It ended up with a showdown between Godunov and the Romanovs. The Romanovs brought their military retinues to Moscow, and when Mikhail Romanov, the future Tsar, was only 5 years old, well, there was a dynastic cataclysm. In 1600, Godunov attacked Fyodor Romanov and the whole Romanov clan. They were accused of treason, they were accused of sorcery. Some of their servants and household members were tortured into admitting that the Romanovs practiced witchcraft and brewed poisons. Godunov burned down one of their palaces and exiled them to the far north. To ensure that Fyodor Romanov could never take the throne, he was forced to become a monk under the name Filaret, and his wife was forced to become a nun. Mikhail was sent to live with distant relatives in Belozersk. He remained there for 1.5 years until he was allowed to move to a Romanov estate near Moscow again. Three of the five Romanov brothers were killed or died under very mysterious circumstances. Godunov did not dare touch Filaret and Ivan Romanov. They had a special connection to the previous Tsar. It would have been a bad look, and the disappearance of royal children at the hands of power-hungry relatives has a way of coming back to haunt you. The whispers spread throughout the land that Tsarevich Dmitri had survived, that he had been raised in Poland, and that he would come back to take his throne.
I wonder who was spreading that? The Poles? The Polish media? Why Poland? Why would common Russian people believe that? Why not, I don't know, Siberia? Well, they were starving. A lot of people were actually starving 4 years into Godunov's reign. Not because of his mismanagement or anything, but because of the series of cataclysms that destroyed crops. It was found that only 10% of all arable land was actually used in Russia at the time. And the population started to dwindle. During the smuta, it decreased by 2 times or 3 times.
Yeah, it was a bunch of problems all coming together.
And they started believing this conspiracy theory that Dmitry of Uglich is alive and he is in Poland.
Yes, it is cannot be overemphasized how religious Russian society was at that time. It was extremely religious, and Orthodoxy was the beginning and the end of all political ideology, so to speak, and all culture in general. So when Boris Godunov was elected, not by the will of God, but by the boyars, that led to a very serious political crisis, as the authority of the monarch rested on, well, just a bunch of aristocrats and not on God himself. And this was one of the main contributing factors to the fact that Boris Godunov's reign was so problematic. And on top of that came, of course, the economic troubles that, well, seemed to the people just as a confirmation of what they believed. There were three really bad harvests in a row in 3 years, so until 1603, which caused 20-fold increase in the price of bread and other foodstuffs. And some contemporaries even mentioned 100-fold increase in prices. This caused unprecedented famine in Moscow, in all of central Russia. And of course, the weakened and exhausted and immunodeficient, as we'd now say, population was exposed to epidemics.
Tsinga, how is it called in English? The most popular disease of the time.
Scurvy.
Yeah. Everyone had it, almost.
Cholera and even the king of diseases, the Black Plague, had returned. And only in Moscow, tens of thousands of people were buried in mass graves outside the city limits. The Tsar fought with all his power against the disasters and ordered the distribution of free bread in Moscow, which led to Moscow being flooded with beggars, the destitute. Godunov imported a whole underclass of people with nothing to lose, came to Moscow for the free bread. which is not a very good situation for anyone. As a few centuries later, we could see in Paris with the sans-culottes, who became the main meat of the revolution, and so on. At the same time, Godunov made another huge mistake. He allowed the boyars to dissolve their standing armies if they were not able to pay them. And of course, most boyars during this time of crisis were not able to feed and pay their retainers, which led to the emergence of an incredible amount of bandits roaming the lands. And many of these gangs were literally just armies. Just the boyar retainers staying together and becoming armies of robbers against whom the regular army had to be used. It was especially bad in the south, in the southwest, on the borders with the Wild Field and the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. And not by chance, of course, it was there that the fire of the troubles eventually broke out. The people, of course, started believing in all kinds of apocalyptic prophecies and whatever myths were spread, and especially that all the disasters that were befalling Russia were God's punishment for the sins of Tsar Boris Godunov. And it was then that people really started believing in the miraculous rescue of the last of Ivan IV's sons, Tsarevich Dmitry. It is not an accident or not a rare belief that in a time of troubles, a glorious monarch will return. The king asleep in the mountain is a very common motif. Most European countries have a kind of myth like that, be it, I don't know, Frederick Barbarossa in Germany, be it King Harold, who supposedly survived the Battle of Hastings and would one day come to liberate the English from the Norman yoke. Of course, you have Sebastianism in Portugal, the messianic belief that Sebastian of Portugal, who disappeared in the Battle of Alcácer Quibir in Morocco, would one day return to save Portugal in its most difficult hour. And then, of course, you have the modern versions of that, QAnon, with Donald Trump rising up and coming with sealed indictments that will save the country. And it is a very common belief among peoples who live through troubled periods of time that it is God's punishment, and in the last, most difficult hour, hero will appear to save everyone. And for the people of Russia during that time, it was Lže Dmitry, the false Dmitry.
Okay, Grishka Trepyev. Grishka Rastrishka, I think, was his moniker later on, because according to one of the eyewitness accounts, the German traveler Konrad Busov, fake Dmitry I was actually former monk of the Chudov monastery, who fled to Dnieper River as it was controlled by the Poles. He became part of the Polish court and was raised there as a pretender. Rastriga means a former monk, so a monk who was deprived of his spiritual dignity by a decree. The first pretender has come out of the woodwork. He befriended there a Polish nobleman, Yuri Mniszek, and has promised to marry his daughter, Marina Mniszek, and make her a queen of Russia if he succeeds in taking the throne of Russian Tsardom. So he needed army, of course, to do that. And Yuri, or Jerzy Mniszek, provided an army of mercenaries to fake Dmitry to invade Russia. He thought that it's a good idea. If this pretender succeeds, his daughter, Marina, becomes a queen of Russia.
Yes, we left out a part that will become very important later on. The Polish magnates were very interested in this project of putting a false Tsar on the throne in Moscow. And especially Sigismund III was interested in this. He was a very pious Catholic. The plan was basically to create a church union similar to the Brest Union that had been created in Ukraine, of what we know nowadays as the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. And Jesuits, who at that point were already present in Russia, of course, joined the plan. And in the spring of 1604, the impostor converted to Catholicism and gave to Sigismund the promise that in the event of his victory and his ascension to the throne, he would convert Russia to Catholicism instead of...
Was it officially recorded, his conversion in 1604? A full 1.5 hour version is available for our subscribers on Patreon and Gumroad. Become a member of our lively community, support us for $5, and explore the hidden history of Russia. Thank you.